Empower Radio presents The Miracle of Healing with Lisa Campion. Meet healers, learn different modalities, and hear empowering stories of people on their healing journey. The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Lisa Campion.
Hey there, this is Lisa Campion, and this is The Miracle of Healing right here on Power Radio, where conscious people come together and explore the world of healing to heal the planet one person at a time. So we have a fabulous guest with us today. His name is Frank Pasciuti, and he's a psychologist. He wrote this book that was really was coming at a moment in my own life that I found very beautiful to read. It's called The Chrysalis Crisis, How Life's Ordeals Can Lead to Personal and Spiritual Transformation. So hi, Frank.
Hi, Lisa. Thank you for having me on your show.
Oh, I'm so excited to have you on our show. And I really was, I don't know, like there's some kind of magic that happens with these radio shows. I'm not kidding, where whatever I'm going through in my own life, like the person that I'm interviewing that week has some impact or meaning for it. And that you definitely showed up that way this week for me, because your book is really about helping people look at the ordeals, the crises, the challenges that we have that are just the normal flow we have in life. And instead of really feeling victimized by those things, to see the potential for personal spiritual growth in the challenges that we have.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, sometimes it's not always evident, and it might be premature to say to somebody who's in the middle of a crisis or just in the aftermath of it, you know, like, what does this crisis have to teach you? Because you want to be able to allow people to have their feelings and get grounded again. But there's usually a pivot point, I think, after the crisis subsides a little bit, where you look back and you start realizing, you know, these things happen in life, and they all have something to teach us. And so some people choose to go forward and see what they can learn from the experience. And others are just want to pack up and just get regrounded and, you know, return back to the things they were doing. But for those who opt for the former path, a lot of times there can be it's like an opening. These crises can open us up to shift and change.
Yeah. Do you think that they shift us sort of out of our normal perspective, and they offer in a way like almost an initiation experience, you know, where we're not the same as we were on the other side of them?
I agree. And sometimes you could say people have a breakdown or they have a break open, you know.
Right.
Sometimes it breaks you open. I mean, it may be very painful, and it's unfortunately, you know, suffering seems to accompany them, but suffering gets your attention. You know, there's a lot of research in psychotherapy that, you know, if there's, unfortunately, you know, the people who are coming to alleviate pain, alleviate the suffering, use the process so much better than somebody who might just be curious about this therapy thing or, you know, wants to sit down and, you know, just chat. You know, there's an element of really, you know, feeling motivated by the pain to really be willing to make changes.
Yeah, I know my own practice. So I work as a spiritual counselor, like a therapist, and a psychic and an energy healer. So I kind of mash those all up. And that, as a practitioner myself, I hate to say it because it sounds uncompassionate, but I like working with people that are in a crisis because I feel like they're very motivated. They're very motivated to change. They have that kind of cracked open thing. And I think sometimes we have to be pushed, you know, out of our comfort zone, or we have to feel like the pain we're in can sort of outweigh the fear we have of change. And then stuff happens. Like we actually can transform in those moments.
I think you're right. And, you know, it's what I find interesting is that despite, even if people come in with the same crisis, how they heal from it and integrate the experience has a lot to do with, you know, what, you know, you typically call their pre-morbid conditioning. Like, what were they? Where were they? Like somebody who maybe was very cerebral, very intellectual, and has an experience where they lose somebody they love, and they have lots of feelings associated to that. They may not be as comfortable or as understanding or as capable, if you will, of working through the many feelings. And you might have feelings of grief, and you might have feelings of fear, and you might have feelings of anger. And yet, if you're not somebody who's been able to register those feelings or are comfortable expressing them, identifying them and expressing them, and it could be a time for real emotional growth. I mean, or it may be the opposite, somebody who's very emotional, who's keeps themselves or gets disproportionately upset and stays upset. It might be that they need to do some work on understanding how they think about this. They may have to change some beliefs, or it could implicate a whole bunch of different areas. I identify 10 of them. And you know, could, any number of them could get called in on with a given person that, you know, change and growth on a number of them may be required in order to heal from the experience.
Yeah. You led with the story, about sort of how your own coming into psychology and the story of your mother and your father, which is such a beautiful story. And, you know, you don't really reveal until the end of that little story that it was your parents. So I was like all excited reading about this beautiful woman and her husband, and I'm like, oh my God, it's your parents, you know. And it was such a great, I think your mother was such a great impression on you, created a great impression, and is a really good example of somebody who used some pretty significant traumas and challenges to further open her. And your dad was maybe more one of those people that didn't do that.
Well, that's a good, yeah, it's true. And so I had this lesson right within the midst of my own immediate family. And, you know, they were both really good people. And yet my mom's was thinking that she might die early on when she got MS about 10 years before I was born. I think that her whole search for understanding, you know, ways, alternative ways she might be able to heal, there was an influence from her father, my grandfather, on the power of the mind involved and how it has influence on healing and even some understanding of psychic and spiritual components to healing. And so that was an awakening for her. And in a way, I was an indirect beneficiary of her search, which opened me to these areas, which, you know, when you grow up with it, you take it for granted a little bit, and maybe you wonder whether it's even valid because it's, you know, you want to make sure you're not indoctrinated in the, you know, the party right. line. So for me, that kind of like laid the groundwork for my looking into things and saying, okay, how does this hold up and what field do I need to be in that's going to give me the answers? And so that also led for me to get into becoming a psychologist.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I mean, you know, like you could see with your mom, you know, really, and also I think it, her story, she really brought in the spiritual side of things, you know. And I have the same, a little bit of a similar experience in my family where I have a relative that had a pretty profound mental illness and that impacted all of us. And in the extended family, like almost all of the women in my family are therapists or healers or, And I just like, we all kind of found our own way to healing because it was so powerful to witness that person being, you know, suffer so much. And I think it created pull towards wanting to help people.
Yeah. It opens you up to the need and you want to you have compassion and trying to, you know, seek understanding, which are just like a lot of the driving forces that lead people to get into the therapeutic fields.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, it's really, and so for me, the part of writing this book was also that I wanted to throw my arms out in the widest reach to get them around areas that can be awakened by crises of more conventional nature versus those that are less conventional, called spiritual emergencies. And right. I thought, well, so what can be the way of looking at these areas where I can say that they're all crises in a way, but some implicate, you know, like, you know, some of those conventional areas, like, you know, thinking, feeling, you know, moral development, social development, intellectual development, and physical development. And then others get into like awakening your intuitive capacities or actually have spiritual experiences more than religious. It's more like, you know, having a crisis where you're really open to, you know, having, you know, beholding spirit or having a direct experience of, you know, your mind being, awareness being separate from your body, like in a near-death experience. Or I'll see people sometime who will wonder if they're losing their mind because they have a precognition and awareness of an event before it happens. And those can be interesting crises to work with because that they may not have any clue about psychic abilities or intuitive capacities or direct contact with spirit. And so you know, very non-conventional, but also awakens them to capacities that they have.
Yeah. Well, that was my favorite chapter of your book. I love that one. And, you know, I like, you know, you really break it down into three sections, you know, with these keys. And I'm sure we've all been through the all of these things, so the foundational areas, the areas of personal development, and then these transpersonal areas. And you just hit on my favorite one. When you talked about spiritual emergencies, it's a little bit my life expertise and where my spiritual crisis was is in that area, you know. So, but before we talk about that one, can you talk about a little bit maybe these other keys that people may be encountering?
Well, sure. They have, I have like 10 identify, and the first five are very familiar to us, like a crisis that might implicate one's physical well-being or have implications for, you know, it could be a crisis. It doesn't have to be physical body. It could be financial crisis. It could be issues of dealing with like a tornado or something that affects your whole physical world.
Yeah.
But then you get into, you know, and feelings and your physicality and the way you think about things. I mean, these run through all the different dimensions. But some of them get more personal, like, you know, your capacity to develop intimate connection with others, like how comfortable you are opening up and sharing yourself. That would be, you know, the area of intimacy or identity, how your identity changes throughout the life cycle. You know, how you might find yourself feeling, you know, thinking about yourself one way, and then after this experience or after any experience, you suddenly start thinking of yourself in a more broader way, or you shift out of that. Or existential kind of learning, where you're looking for meaning and purpose. So those are some of the other areas.
Yeah. And you talked about one that you had in your personal life, too. That was your sort of midlife crisis that brought you to your opportunity to practice this in your own life. Is that something that you'd be willing to talk about?
You mean the experiences that I had? Sure. You know, I heard about a lot of these different kind of phenomena in my life because my family was open to it, and we had involved ourselves, or some of them involved themselves, with a mystical organization that called the Rosicrucians, and we were also being raised in 1950s and 60s Catholic thinking, because we were, you know, growing up in North New Jersey. In Newark, New Jersey, which is a very Italian Catholic area. So, you know, in some ways you look at, you know, some of these kind of psychic phenomena in light of, you know, the miracles, or in Hindu philosophy, they call them siddhis. But it wasn't until I had some experiences earlier in my life, but it wasn't until I was about 17 that I had my first, what I would call precognitive experience. And it was kind of interesting, because it was sort of like, oh, okay, this is what this is, you know. But, you know, not to get into thinking you're special because of it, but I think if you are open to being aware of these phenomena, you're more likely to register them. If you think it's a bunch of hogwash and you close your mind off, the subtle impressions that they that might clue you into their, you know, existence could be missed. So I had one before my sister's wedding, for example, in a dream about events that took place on that day. And, you know, shared that dream with my mother, and you know, in the aftermath, when it actually did unfold in that manner, it was like a kind of a tickle, like, oh my gosh, I really did have, you know, an experience where I was, you know, able to have some awareness of something that basically happened before linear time would have brought it to my awareness under normal conditions.
And for a lot of people, you sounds like, because you had a kind of spiritual family that had a broader framework, but you could sort of absorb that in maybe a way that wasn't like a profound crisis for you. But certainly in my work as a psychic, I've seen a lot of people have, you know, like those psychic emergencies or spiritual emergencies where they open so quickly that they don't have a context for what's going on for them, and it can be really scary or overwhelming in some ways that will force them into a crisis because it's such a radical shift of perspective.
Well, I can tell you about the first person I had to treat clinically who had that, which I thought was interesting, because he brought both both which you might say, a spiritual emergency issue and a more conventional issue before me as a training psychotherapist. And it really opened the door for me to see how these can intermingle, and you need to disentangle them. So I was working at Michigan State University when I was getting my doctorate. And before I went there to do that work, I had a master's, and I had already spent a year and a half working in a home with schizophrenics. I lived in the home. They were being deinstitutionalized back in the 70s. And so I had a good feel for schizophrenia and, you know, living in the house and sharing a bathroom and eating dinner and, you know, working closely. So when I was in my doctoral program a couple of years later, this fella comes walking into our system, and Michigan State had about 45,000 students at the time and 60 therapists on staff. And he came in, and everybody took a turn doing intakes, and then if they couldn't pick the person up, they would delegate him out, or people would pick him up. And this guy comes in, and he said, one of the therapists said, this guy came in and said he thought he was the angel of death, and sounded really crazy. And he said, yeah, he was talking about something like, you know, having sort of had this serious accident and seeing his body from, you know, at a place when other people were coming to his rescue. And, you know, and so I'm thinking, well, that sounds like an NDE to me. I just read Raymond Moody's book, and I sort of like volunteered to pick him up. And he said the same thing when he came in to see me. He said, I think I'm the angel of death. I think everybody, I have these dreams and these people I know are dying. And, you know, he said, I'm really afraid because right now I'm thinking about my fiance, and I'm worried that if I think about her and I have these kinds of thoughts about her, she's going to die. And so I asked him more about his, you know, near-death experience, and indeed he had it, but he wasn't aware of it. I said, well, you may want to get Raymond Moody's book. That'll explain your experience last summer. And what I didn't know at the time, which I know now, and actually a good friend of mine who served as a director of that program at UVA, he had been doing research down the road at the University of Michigan and was finding that people who have NDEs afterwards are more likely to have psychic experiences. It's almost like the NDE loosens the tether of the mind to the body, and so it's more open to subtle impressions that might be, you know, lend themselves to psychic experiences. So anyway, I worked with him, and I got the approval of my supervisor, and as a result of that was cued to the Bible. It's just fortunate for me, my individual supervisor at the time and my group supervisor were both on to areas. Like, one said, hey, have you ever heard about the Monroe Institute in Virginia? And the other one said, oh yeah, you know, there's another program down there in the University of Virginia where they study reincarnation and near-death studies and mediumship and all that. And then I was also aware that the Edgar Cayce Foundation was in Virginia, so that kind of pointed me in this direction. So I thought, oh, cool. Interesting. A lot to be learned. There's a place where I can learn it all.
That's amazing.
He was an interesting guy, but the other thing, if you don't mind me going on here, is he also had conventional problems. Nothing did happen to his fiance. He did indeed have a precognitive dream that his uncle would die. And one of the most notable things he had was back in the late 70s, the president of Italy, Aldo Moro, was kidnapped and nobody knew where he was. Well, this guy had a dream that he was found in the trunk of his car, killed. And he told his roommate, and that had not been out yet. And about 2 days later, it came over the radio that indeed that was how they found this guy. So he was flipping people out with these things that were happening in his life. And then he was worrying that something was going to happen to his fiance, which wasn't as much a reality as far as it coming to pass, but it was more like what we would call in a trade, a wish fear. Yep. And so he wasn't ready to get married, but he didn't know how to tell her.
Right. So interesting. I always say there's only a few letters difference between psychic and psychotic.
You know? Yeah.
It's a matter of training or perspective, or really what I see is when people who are really, really psychic have incredible trauma, there's a certain kind of, I think, psychosis that can happen. And I mean, there's a million reasons for the origins of mental health issues that, you know, that's a broad topic, but I've always really been interested in the sort of spiritual causations of mental health issues and those kind of crises. And I think that they are sometimes these misunderstood spiritual crises that can push us into a deeper level of healing.
Well, you know, the way I try to pull it together in my concept, and I'm offering in this book explanatory model, which I want to do is get people to see where developing the capacities and to whatever extent they can master some of these keys that are much more familiar to us, like learning more about being able to register and learning more about feelings and having a sense of deepening one's intimacy, capacity to go deeper and share of oneself, or expanding one's identity to include the capacity for some of these gifts that we're all endowed with inherently. But the thing is, as you circle back to those keys, I sort of refer to them in the book as using the keys at a higher octave. They can serve the subtle development of intuition and spiritual capacities. And it doesn't have to necessarily mean spiritual as in you've got to be a Buddhist or a Catholic. It may mean it's just a range of capacities to be able to behold or experience spirit separate from the body, and or the various kinds of intuitions that we have the capacities for, like, you know, creativity is an intuitive function, as well as precognition or clairvoyance or other of these more psychic phenomena. They all come from the unconscious, if you will, within ourselves.
So these can be very integrative experiences if we sort of lean in and do the work that's in front of us. We can integrate. And I felt like in this theme in your book that, I feel like your compassion comes through so strongly in the book that, you know, your heart and your compassion is so powerful. And it made me think, there's one moment when I was reading, and I was like, wow, these experiences can, these challenges and ordeals can have the opportunity to create more compassion in everyone who's experiencing them. And it sort of made me wonder if that's like the underlying reason, one of the underlying reasons we have them. Do you think that we could be having challenges because we're supposed to learn to be more compassionate?
I would think that that's a big piece of it for sure. Yes, I mean, learning to be compassionate for others and also ourselves. You know, there was a book written years ago called Self-Hate and Self-Compassion. And I think there's always, you know, like the cornerstone of our trade is that everything is to be understood, and that, you know, people aren't just random and arbitrary. There's usually reasons why even the most horrendous things, you know, I mean, people, you start looking at why is this person doing this? And yes, people have to be protected from, you know, violent people, or yes, there are problems that are really, you know, attributable to, you know, neurochemical processes and stuff that's genetic and comes down the pike. But, you know, there's usually reasons for things, and it's hard to not react, but to try to find that compassion, which goes hand in hand with understanding. And so, yeah, I think for me, I feel blessed that I found this field, because I think, you know, one of the virtues that I'm working on in my life is patience. And I think you can get impatient with people, but when you hear their story and you understand why they do the things they do, you shift. You shift to understanding, and you could say, oh, okay, this is what maybe Jesus meant when he said, love your enemies. Well, love can be challenging sometimes, that kind of love, finding love for people that you want to just, like, react towards, you know? So it helps. It helps to understand ourselves and others.
Yes, it totally does. So your book, Chrysalis Crisis, How Life's Ordeals Can Lead to Personal and Spiritual Transformation, how can people get it, and how can people find you?
Well, I have a website. It's my name, Frank Pisciuti, .com. And on there, they'll see, you know, so the description of, you know, my background, even how I do therapy. There's a page in there on the book, and they can find it on Amazon, and I think it's in Barnes & Noble, and it's out there. So, and you know, it's broad enough that there's going to probably be chapters in there that will speak to you stronger than others. And there was really a hope in my part that writing the book and starting in conventional areas that everybody can relate to, that I might be able to Pied Piper them over a bridge to start considering some of these other kinds of capacities that are less familiar, but equally, you know, inherently potential within everybody. So I hope that people will get that.
Well, yeah, I certainly did. And I loved how you made that bridge, you know, starting with sort of the more, I hate to call them mundane, because they're not really mundane, it's not really the right word, but more ordinary, you know, issues that people have, and moving them into sort of the spiritual realm. So it's a lovely book. And I thank you so much for being with us on the show today.
Thank you, Lisa. Well, I appreciated talking to you. It was very enjoyable for me, and I wish you and all your listeners well. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Frank.
Okay.
And thanks, all of you guys, for joining us today on The Miracle of Healing. You can find me at lisacampion.com. Come over and check out my website. I always have some free goodies for you and a lot of free resources that are available for you. So I just appreciate all of you today. And thank you. So thanks for joining us on The Miracle of Healing, and where we are healing the planet one person at a time right here on Empower Radio.